The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Wednesday, Gary, good morning.
Good morning. Lots to cover, including Hurricane Michael right now.
We are directly in the path. We've been on the edge of several over the last few years. This one, we're right in the path. So my advice to the people that are now staying, that, once the winds get over 50 miles an hour, our first responders, police, fire, they're not going to be able to get to you. So hopefully you've got enough water and food and stuff to take care of yourself.
Mayor Greg Brodnicki of Panama City, Florida, yeah. Where it looks like, it's headed right towards. And the developments, if you want to know the developments over the last couple of hours, the 10 p.m. National Hurricane Center update shows it now at 125 miles an hour, the winds.
Right.
And expected to be right now over 130, which would make it at least a Category 4 hurricane that would hit the Panhandle Gulf Coast.
Right. They're talking about the storm surge being a really strong storm surge, and talking about how the potential for life-threatening conditions is really great with this storm. Everyone in this area needs to heed the warnings and listen to officials and those directives given by officials in the coming hours, if you haven't already, because you see the pictures and the videos. The people in that area getting ready, evacuating, boarding up windows and everything else. This is a major storm already and has the potential to be, and most believe it will be a historic storm in terms of the damage and the size of the storm. It will then move inland with a ton of rainfall. We were talking during the pre-show meeting as it moves through the panhandle of Florida and then goes in a northeasterly direction toward the Carolinas. It's going to be dumping a lot of rain. The Carolinas, they're saying it will move faster than Florence, so it won't present the same problems. But the problem is with the areas affected by Florence that are already saturated, the ground is already saturated, then, of course, any rain at all is going to cause problems. And they will be getting rain in those areas in the coming days. But more immediately, we're looking at the panhandle of Florida and Panama City, essentially being the target right now for Hurricane Michael.
And when you see winds of over 130 miles an hour, if it's a Category 4, they say it would be the biggest hurricane ever to hit the panhandle. Mm-hmm. When I lived in Navarre, Florida, when I lived in the Fort Walton Beach, Pensacola area back in the 80s, everybody still talked about Camille. That
right.
really hit,
yeah.
Biloxi, though, and it was a little bit further down the coast that hit as a 5.
Right.
Yeah. And if you've ever seen any of the documentaries on Camille, you know how bad it can be when you have a hurricane of that strength. If you have a hurricane that hits the Gulf Coast at 130 miles an hour, your life is at risk if you're anywhere, near the coast,
right?
At that point, so we know that's why you had the mayor of Panama City encouraging everybody to get out, because he said winds get over 50 miles an hour and they're out.
Yeah, right. Yes.
You're going to have public safety. There's not going to be anybody there to.
And you talk about the problems too. Just imagine that whatever structure you're in was able to withstand the winds or the flooding. Beyond that, you're talking about loss of power for who knows how long. You're talking about the fact that with the flooding, they don't know what the logistics will be for, and this is the case for any major storm, but especially one of this magnitude. You don't know what the supply chain of goods is going to be in terms of the essentials, especially things like water. So if you're not able to use or drink the water, imagine if you stayed in the building or in your home. If you have no electricity and you can't use the or drink the running water or any of that, you're going to be in a very dangerous situation. On top of that, you're also putting others at risk in the event that you have to be rescued because your structure cannot withstand the flooding or the winds.
We'll have the latest updates throughout the morning, including when the National Hurricane Center releases their next update that I believe is about 50 minutes from now.
Right.
So we'll have that for you. Plus, meteorologist Tom Hale will join us here at the bottom of the hour. He covered the recent hurricane. Florence did great coverage for us there.
Yes.
And landfall coverage of Irma in Florida last year for us. So he'll join us here throughout the night. Also, we will have our own meteorologist, John Trout, who will also join us a little bit later on in the show. So updates throughout the morning. Plus, we'll be covering all the different news items out there. Nikki Haley resigns as UN ambassador. You know, the interesting thing is we have gone now over 12 hours and nothing has leaked.
Yeah.
As right. to, why she is leaving.
Right, right.
Even though it seems that, and I know the media was jumping on this immediately. In fact, who was it? Was it MSNBC or CNN? Somebody was making the thing, well, she's out because of the Kavanaugh stuff. And it was like,
yeah,
oh, come
right,
on.
Right, right.
Maybe I saw that on social media. That's right. Okay, I want to make, I don't want to indict anybody who didn't, make that statement.
Right, right.
So I believe I saw that on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who did it because, Twitter flies by so quickly, but they were just pounded on immediately that, oh, she's quitting because Kavanaugh's going to be a Supreme Court justice. Apparently this had been in the works a while, and it seems to be right now that most people really have no idea, but they sense that she only wanted to be there for 2 years because she's staying till the end of the year, which means
you're right.
She's been there 2 years. And by the way, that happens quite frequently in an administration. Somebody will come in, put in 2 years, get you going, and then they want to move on to something else. Mm-hmm. Everybody is trying to predict what she's going to do, whether she's going to run for president. And I like the scenario that she's out, there. And what was the scenario? All I know is the scenario had
Pence is going to run in 2020. She's going to be the Veep.
It ended with Jeff Sessions, being out of being Attorney General. I mean,
right.
people had all sorts of conspiracy theories. We look at it and say, well, we'll wait and see. We don't really deal with conspiracy theories here.
Right, right, right.
But, she did good. I mean, she was, if you look at one of the people that he brought in early that actually worked out, she was one of the few.
Yeah. Well, and I think she goes out on a strong note.
Yes, absolutely.
If you anything could happen in the next 3 months, but I don't think it's going to change the demeanor and the fortitude of someone like a Nikki Haley. If you listen to her words at UN, if you look at her positions and how strong she's been for the president, that is a very unique position to be in for, especially for this particular president who's not afraid to speak his mind and himself, I think, has been very strong. We look at his UN speech recently, and I think he did a great job. And he's been very clear on his positions. If you look at having Michael Bolton John Bolton at his side. Not Michael Bolton. It's not there yet.
When
although
a man
Michael
loves a woman.
Yeah, some bad remakes in the White House hallways. John Bolton. By the way, Michael Bolton could be he could be a good national security advisor. He would scare a lot of people.
Oh, so you mean the singer, not the guy from Office Space.
No. Is there a Michael Bolton from Office Space?
Yeah, that was his. Remember, that was.
Oh, was there somebody named Michael Bolton? I didn't watch Office Space.
No.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking The Office.
The Office. No.
I'm off 100% tonight.
No.
Office Space.
Office Space, right.
Office Space, the movie.
Right.
The iconic movie.
The iconic movie, yes.
Yeah, I didn't get enough sleep today. More coffee, please.
Yeah, okay.
But if you have John Bolton by your side.
I don't know if I can deal with you like that.
I know. Maybe I should have brought booze. But if you have John Bolton by your side as National Security Advisor, if you have a Nikki Haley in place as UN Ambassador, my question is, how do you fill Nikki Haley's shoes? I know it's UN Ambassador, and it's one of those jobs where, you know, you're kind of just basically, in this case, you're the mouthpiece for the president. You're going to go out to the world, to the other nations, and you're going to advise them as to what the policy is or going to be. But in the scenario where you have a John Bolton and you have a Mike Pompeo, did I get that one right?
Yes, you did.
The strength, I think, right now of this cabinet and staff, and I put Nikki Haley in there, is right now, I mean, and we could, maybe in the first year, you could go in and you could poke holes, and people did, with Tillerson, as Secretary of State, saying, he's not the right guy, and ultimately he wasn't. But if you look at it right now, where it's set up, and I'm talking about national security-wise, and where we are with countries like Iran, North Korea, and even some of our, Saudi Arabia, you know, the president's stance on the Saudis recently, I think it requires somebody of significant strength. I'm not saying there's not anyone there, but it's going to have to be somebody who has that strength that can go to the UN and do what Nikki Haley
does. I don't mean to downplay the importance of the UN ambassador, mm-hmm. but it is somebody who can, if you're looking for a quality, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily looking for a quality of the normal presidential spokesperson.
Right.
And I'm not mm-hmm. talking about Sarah Sanders, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the normal one where, you know, if you look at all the presidential spokespeople over the last, you know, just right. look 20 years.
Right.
You look at them and you just say, because remember, they're parroting what the administration wants. They're parroting
yes.
their message.
Right.
And the thing that made Sarah Sanders Huckabee so great is she's direct and in your face.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually the way, and you want to project the image of the president of the United States that you represent.
Mm-hmm.
So imagery of being able to take what the president says
yeah.
and speak at the UN with that same kind of force that she did is what you're looking for. And I can't tell you because I haven't seen, you know, I really haven't seen in that setting any of the people that I hear so far may be up for it. I've never witnessed them speaking in that particular matter. One thing that I wanted to say about Nikki Haley, though, and it just shows you how the mainstream media is just nuts, because they would always ask her, and I love this question. It rarely is asked to anybody who serves in a Democrat president's cabinet. Mm. But well, when you disagree with the president, how do you deal with it? Of course I'm going to disagree with the president, because my job is not to promote what I believe. It's to promote what the president believes.
Right.
So, of course, we're going to have differences. But if we have differences, we talk about it. But it's his administration that I serve in. It's like you or I. If we, one of the reasons we yeah. would have trouble ever working
right.
in any administration is because we would have a problem promoting something that we didn't believe in.
Right.
And there
right,
are
right.
there are people that and again, I have nothing against people who do that. That's your job. Your job is to parrot what the administration wants.
Mm-hmm.
You repeat what the administration wants to the world
mm-hmm.
when you are UN, UN ambassador. The mm-hmm. problem with you and I is we've been talk show hosts too long. We probably couldn't do that, or we would get frustrated
yeah.
Doing that. Even if we thought the president was 90% right, we want to get our 10% in. You can't do that when you're a UN ambassador. You have to
be the national security advisor to be in that position.
That
he talks to the public, but he's an advisor as opposed to someone who is mimicking or relaying a message.
And Bolton said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when they asked him, well, you know,
Michael or
John Bolton. when John Bolton was asked that, he's always asked. He said, "Well, look, when you were when you were whatever 5 years ago, you said this, and now you're saying this. And he said, well, this is what the president wished to do. I was a private citizen back then. The president believes that everything has changed at this point, and I do it. But look, I give the president advice. The president and I disagree.
Right.
I give him advice.
What he does with it is
but
his.
I'm the national security advisor.
Advisor. It's an advisory role.
Right. I tell him what to I tell him this is what I think you should do.
Right.
He doesn't necessarily have to follow it. And then when he says, let's go and do it, well, then I tell you what the plan is of the president. And
right.
I sit there and I'm just want to pull my hair out saying, why are we going through this? Because everybody knows it already.
Well, but do they? In a nation where they can't name the three branches of government.
Well, no.
I
think the reporters do it because they want to, they're trying to find anything to show that there is discord within the administration.
Yes, yes. It is, and they attempted to do that with Nikki Haley, as you mentioned earlier. And I think to your point, the earlier point you made as well on the list of possibilities and the possible people who might take her spot, I probably wouldn't have seen a Nikki Haley in that position as strong as she has been. When she was governor, I probably wouldn't have been able to say, wow, she's going to go to the UN and she's really going
to
make some noise. You
That's
know?
A great
so,
point.
So
That's
anybody on those
point.
List could be, you know, just as strong as stronger as she's been. And I trust the president now, maybe not in his first year so much, but I trust the president now. And also trust the situation. And we said this in his second year, as he moved into his second year of presidency, we talked about how people who were going to work with him, either on staff or in the cabinet, would know what they were in for after that first year. And so anybody who accepts that role knows what they're in for, which means they're up for that job as well from their perspective.
We have a busy and great show ahead.
We do.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley. You know, just very quickly, we do have a hurricane update coming up following the bottom of the hour with meteorologist Tom Hale. He will join us. But you make a great point when you talk about the fact that when you talk about, you know, I think both of us, I made a fair point. You made a great point.
Mm.
But you really don't know what you're going to get until you see somebody sitting in front of the UN. It's
sure.
almost like a presidential spokesperson.
Right.
I was making the analogy to you. It was almost like an NFL quarterback. You
right.
draft an NFL quarterback. You have no idea how they're going to perform. You have no idea.
Right.
And all of a sudden they get on the field and you're just like, oh, they stink. Oh,
yeah.
They're really, really good. And I had mentioned Sarah Huckabee Sanders that you know, most presidential spokespeople I don't like. But if you would have told me when and I probably made the comment. I don't remember specifically making it. But when she came aboard, I probably went, no, I just don't think she has it.
Right.
Boy, was I wrong.
You know, and she has been very, she doesn't even flinch anymore. If you look at the nature of the ridiculous questions thrown at her every single day now, it's more like a game. And that's the way she plays it. But at first, it was not a game. And it's not an easy job. It's not a job that anybody would want, but she's been very good in it. And you're right, with few exceptions, like a John Bolton, you know, you pretty much know what you're going to get with a John Bolton. But otherwise, there are a lot of people on that list, and we'll see. But clearly, again, going in, I think they know what they're in for, not only internationally and what we're dealing with at the UN, but of course, what the president expects. Drivers for Cobra Electronics, you should be aware that there are parts of I-75 and also I-10 there in the Florida Panhandle. That are going to be affected by this storm. As you can imagine, especially everything pretty much east of Mobile on I-10 is going to be affected, it could be for a number of days. So know that, when you're going in, there's going to be a lot of staging, in fact, in that area of, trucks that are loaded with generators and water and all kinds of supplies that will be going into Florida when the storm passes and the conditions are safe to get that stuff in. But we just want to remind you that that is going to be very treacherous for the coming days and the foreseeable future, at least I would say over the next several days into the weekend. We'll talk with meteorologist Tom Hale, get an update on Hurricane Michael next.
they wag their fingers. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Meteorologist Tom Hale joins us right now to get us caught up on Hurricane Michael. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing
good.
Well. What do we know about Michael in the current conditions, and what do we expect over the next 12 to 24 hours?
Well, I wish that I could say that this is going to be a pretty picture, but it's not. I am encouraged by a number of the reports that have indicated a lot of people have evacuated Panama City, also down all the way through St. Joe and Apalachicola and that southern point. Then, of course, from there up to Tallahassee. Now, folks in Tallahassee, some of them have been boarding up and all that. But what we can expect is really simple. Right now, it is a Category 3 hurricane. That means sustained winds at 125 miles an hour. And for those of you who are kind of geeky, you can write this down. The minimum pressure is 947 millibars. And it's moving to the north at 12 miles an hour. And right now, it is 220 miles to the south-southwest of Panama City. Now, it's in a northerly direction. So for it to actually hit the target, which right now is estimated between Panama City and the tip of Apalachicola, it's going to have to make a little bit of a right turn. And so, in simple terms, what people are going to expect is some significant weather that they have not seen in their lifetime. Well, it's not totally fair to say that. Well, no, I guess it really is. Because I expect it in the next advisory to go up 5 or 6 miles an hour. If it goes up 6 miles an hour, it'll qualify as a Category 4 hurricane. And a Category 4 hurricane hitting this coast, according to the National Weather Service out of Tallahassee, would be the strongest hurricane on record to hit the Florida Panhandle coastline.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
yeah. And that's ever. That's the strongest one on record.
Yeah, we had talked earlier that, you know, Camille down the coast a little bit, you know, the Category 5 hitting in 69, that just devastated that part. So you have an idea of what winds. And that's the point. When you talk about, you know, you get to a Category 4 hurricane, you're talking about winds over 131 miles an hour. That's a little different than maybe a Hurricane 1, where you may have 80-mile-an-hour winds or 85-mile-an-hour winds. It's a completely different ballgame, isn't
right.
it?
Exactly. And when we get to the Category 3, it changes. We call it a major hurricane. A Category 1 and 2 are not major hurricanes. But they're still, I mean, we saw a Category 2, Florence. It was a Category 3 briefly, but we saw Florence come in. And, you know, we did coverage here on Red Eye Radio for 4 days with Florence, and that puppy just hung along the coastline. This is not going to be the case here. By tomorrow, as this moves its way out of here, its winds will be affecting the Florida and South and North Carolina shoreline. And, in fact, the last time there was a storm of that kind of situation that came through was Kate in 1985. And in Kate's case, Kate, at the same time, its winds wrapping around the giant wind field were causing storms and tornadoes along the Carolinas. And the Carolinas have got a pretty good chance of multiple tornadoes associated with this. And you know, anyone in this entire area of the Big Bend and the Panhandle are going to basically relate to Kate, which happened to be in 1985. But this is going to blow Kate out of the water.
Tom, in terms of the danger coming ashore, because I think a lot of people may be looking at, you know, the eye coming ashore, but I mean that where the danger and the potentially life-threatening situations start, what is that timeline? Where is that window, and what should we expect during that timeline?
Okay, when it comes to the timeline on what you should expect, by tomorrow morning, it still should be offshore, and it will be probably still a Category 3, but darn close to a category four. I wouldn't be shocked if in the next advisory in 1 hour from now, it may be upgraded. But by Wednesday evening, it should be onshore. And so that would be in line with Tallahassee. It would be coming across Tallahassee. By Thursday evening, it should be entering the Carolinas and cutting right across the middle of the Carolinas. And so the eastern side of it will be the onshore winds and the rain and the storms. So Charlotte and up the coast. And they don't need any more destruction or anything. Now, winds are going to be around 45 miles an hour when it gets to the Carolinas, and that's going to be Thursday morning. But on Wednesday, today, we're going to have winds in Tallahassee tonight of at least 80 miles an hour and probably sustained winds up to 40 or 50 miles an hour going through Tallahassee. We're looking at winds that are going to be up to 100 miles an hour when we get to coming on shore. And the storm surge is the other really bad situation. From pretty much, I don't want to include Panama City. Panama City, 6 to 9 foot storm surge. And that's in part because their shoreline faces a little more to the southwest. And so when it comes in, if it comes in to the east, the winds are going to be backing. So it will reduce that effect. But you get past that to St. Joe, which is on the peninsula there, swinging around toward Apalachicola. We're looking at a storm surge that will run all the way around through the entire Big Bend. That doesn't include Cedar Key, of 9 to 13 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. 9 to 13 feet. Obviously, once you're past 3 feet, cars float.
Yeah. And so we're talking about, again, in terms of that immediate threat, really the greatest threat right now in those areas along the shoreline, we're talking storm surge, correct?
Storm surge is clearly from, you know, there's a storm surge warning in effect from Panama City past Crystal River. And so, as an example, we're looking at Panama City. Tonight, they'll start seeing winds moving their way up to 50 miles an hour and all the way through an average of 50 miles an hour through Wednesday night. They're going to have gusts Wednesday night. As this storm has come ashore, of 100 miles an hour, and a storm surge of 8 to 12 feet, or excuse me, rain, I'm sorry, of 8 to 12 inches, a foot of rain. So inland and even on the coast, flash flooding is going to be a common event. That rain's got to go somewhere. And once you start to inundate, the water starts to rise under a storm surge. Then from there, then you start dealing with, you know, the rain on top of that. And so we saw that in New Bern. New Bern, on Friday night, before the storm came in the Carolinas, the winds were coming out of the southeast and blowing up the Neuse River. New Bern is at the end of the Neuse River. And they had a water rise of 10.2 feet. And we had the lieutenant, I'm dropping his name, but the lieutenant of the police department there the following day talking about the Friday night rescues, which were over 350 boat rescues that night.
Wow. Well, this should go without saying, but certainly we want to repeat it as often as possible. The people that are in the path of this storm need to heed all of the directives and warnings given by local officials. Do not hesitate. This is going to be a life-threatening storm. It is already a life-threatening storm, and it is right now. You have time to get out of the way of this storm. Tom, in terms of the rainfall, you mentioned that we're going to see in some places maybe 8 to 12 inches of rain. The flooding potential, though, won't necessarily be like it was because of Florence, because the storm is moving faster. Is that correct?
Yeah, to some degree, that's correct. But still, I expect many areas to pick up anywhere from 8 to 12 inches as we move inland through Tallahassee. Mm. And then from there, when we move across the border into Georgia, we're still going to be looking at 5 inches of rain or more in many areas. And I can pull up some maps and break that out next time we talk. But
sure.
the fact of the matter is that it only takes... You know, it doesn't take a lot of water if the ground is saturated for runoff to start flash flooding.
Right.
And we all know the usual places where flash flooding takes place.
Yeah.
Well, the difference here is that this storm, like the Carolinas along the coast, are going to cause flooding in the places that are not the usual places.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. And, when do you expect it onshore?
I expect it onshore between 3 and 4 o'clock.
Okay.
This afternoon.
Okay. All right. Meteorologist Tom Hale, you're going to be with us throughout the morning. Thank you, Tom. Tom has
Thank
done
so
outstanding
much.
Coverage for us, as he mentioned, with Hurricane Florence, and also last year with Hurricane Irma in Florida. So we just want to make sure that everyone knows we're going to be on this for you this morning and tomorrow morning. Thank you, Tom. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you in just a bit.
Look forward to it.
Thank you. We will, again, also be checking in with our meteorologist, John Trout, next hour. Get an update from him. As we go through the morning, any updates also from officials in Florida or at the National Weather Service, we'll bring those
along. And we do have, in another 15 minutes, we will have the National Hurricane Center's latest report, basically the cone.
Yeah, and you look at what Tom was saying, and he's expecting that this could be, they could upgrade this storm to a Category 4 hurricane with this next report that's coming out here in just a bit. And we will go over that with Tom the next time we talk to him, and we'll be doing that later in the program as well. And again, meteorologist John Trout on board as well to give us his latest perspective and update. In the next hour, we'll talk to him.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, more of your calls and comments. You see the story that mortgage rates are going up.
Yep.
And what, 5% now?
Mm. Wow.
Some of the mortgage rates out there. There's an article from CNBC.
You remember when they went down to like 7%? Now, I don't know. You weren't a homeowner yet, were you, when they were in that range?
When I became a homeowner... This would have been 2007, January of 2007 is when I bought my first home. I lived all over the country and never, you know, never settled down. So when I finally bought one, it was 5.6 or 5.7%
on
a 15-year.
I remember,
Which then I, you know, redid for, I think it was like 4.3 and then... The last one, I mean, I won't be doing it again, about 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it was, 3.2.
Yeah, and you look at the, I remember one time refinancing a property, this was years ago, on a 10-year note at 4.25, and I was dancing around the house. I was so happy to reach 4.25. The point being is that, I mean, you know, historically, you look at the rates... And where they were high, I mean, back when we started borrowing more or getting mortgages, it was in the 7 to 8% range, and we felt lucky, you know. But this will affect refis. It will affect purchases. To what extent, you know, it remains to be seen. Because right now, you also have a pretty healthy economy, and so. How does it affect a 30-year note? For younger people, it's not the same consideration for people in our age group because of the fact that we'd like to get it paid off before we, you know, ride off into the retirement sunset. But I think we can expect this from the feds. If you listen to what the Fed chairman was saying the other day, by the way, It didn't really make the news because the Kavanaugh thing, but the Fed chairman saying it is really, and I'm paraphrasing, it's almost too good to be true how good the economy is right now. It's unbelievably good. There was a guy who's regularly on CNBC earlier this week saying at least for the next 2 years, a good economy. So those things override sometimes a mortgage because
yes,
of the fact that
right. You're
spreading it out, you know, over 30 years, unless they've gone the way of the auto loan and maybe it's, maybe it's 120 years. I mean, it just became ridiculous. You can finance for 96 months.
Well,
it's a trot.
I mean, these banks are just praying that we can extend the lifespan of people.
Right, exactly.
The 120-year mortgage.
Exactly. We're going to have to do some more work on the...
We'll get them some innovative financing for a 120-year mortgage, can't we?
We need to invest more in health care if we're going to do that.
Plus, some of the latest polls out there are also coming up, too.
Yeah, very interesting changes in those polls.
And the latest hurricane update from the National Hurricane Center coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
We are directly in the path. We've been on the edge of several over the last few years. This one, we're right in the path. So my advice to the people that are now staying that, you know, once the winds get over 50 miles an hour, our first responders, police, fire, they're not going to be able to get to you. So hopefully you've got enough water and food and stuff to take care of yourself.
That's Mayor of Panama City, Greg Brodnicki, yesterday evening. We just got an update from the National Hurricane Center. And from what we can see with the sustained winds of now 130 miles an hour, it's up to a Category 4.
In fact, the National Hurricane Center is saying it is now a Hurricane Category 4. At 130 miles an hour, you look at the strength of this storm and the history of the storm over the weekend, the predictions being anywhere from a 1 to a 2, and then late in the weekend, more closer to a 2, and pretty much everybody was calling that. By Monday morning, it changed, and they were saying that it has the potential of being a 3, and now it is up to officially a Category 4 hurricane. Hurricane Michael, it is set to come ashore sometime in the afternoon, 3 or 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. They're near Panama City, Florida. And officials, again, you just heard one mayor and other officials have been basically saying the same thing throughout the day. Yesterday they were saying you should be aware that the first responders are going to be limited in being able to get to you. And in many cases, especially while the storm is at its strongest in that area, will not be able to get to you. So you may not have power. You may be in a situation that you will not be able to, again, get any kind of assistance for hours. And so it is best to get out of the way of this storm as soon as possible. Get inland, go somewhere where you will be safe and where you're with others, especially if you have an underlying medical condition or anything else that might warrant that kind of need. So we'll see here in a little while. We're going to talk with meteorologist John Trout. Get caught up on this latest update from the National Hurricane Center. Our meteorologist Tom Hale was with us about a half hour ago, and we were talking about this. In fact, he predicted that it would become officially a Category 4 hurricane. But Michael will be officially the strongest hurricane to ever hit the coast of Florida. And while, you know, you go back to Camille, I was looking over the stats from Hurricane Irma last year. It is a I mean, you talk about the destruction that a storm does, and some of the things, I guess, if you've never been in this situation, that you might not know. I have never been through a hurricane. I've been through some tornadoes in my life, but I've never been through a hurricane. So especially for those people who may be new to that area, I think about, you know, the area where there might be military personnel who are there, you know, temporarily or maybe are new to that area. Certainly you want to heed the warnings if you've never been through that. And even if you have, I was watching a video on what they call the Waffle House Index. And FEMA looks at that. Are they going to, because Waffle House is open 24/7, but if they decide to close those stores, they know that it is going to be a bad storm. They know it is going to be bad in that particular area. And so that's kind of one of the side notes to this story, if you will, and to this news, is that everyone seems to be taking this very seriously, as they should. And anyone that is in the path of Hurricane Michael needs to heed the warnings from the national authorities, as well as especially the local and state authorities in this case.
As you mentioned, John Trout coming up a little bit later on this hour, we will chat with him. Last hour when we talked to Tom Hale, he was talking about the incredible storm surge you're going to see anywhere, you know, when you talk about anywhere in that area of where it's going to hit, mm-hmm. you know, near Panama City, Florida, you know, probably going dozens of miles each way.
Right.
You're talking anywhere between 8 and 14 foot storm surge.
Yes.
Which is extremely, extremely dangerous. And now being a Category 4, they expect it to drop, you know, right in the Florida area up to, you know, a foot of rain. And even as you get inland, because right now it's going north. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to watch this because it's going straight north, and at some point it's going to start heading east, because it does take, I mean, it does almost take a 45 degree angle if you're looking at the cone. And that cone, you think about it, the cone of uncertainty, as they call it, has been extremely consistent over the last couple of days.
Has,
if you noticed it, it really hasn't moved that much.
Right.
It's almost as if they know whatever that front is, that, you know, keeping it down, you know, to the southeastern part of the United States must be pretty strong, because that hasn't changed at all. And the track is still the same, where it cuts right through, you know, the middle of Georgia, hits the southeastern part of Alabama, then cuts right through Georgia and then South Carolina and the North Carolina, and then out to the ocean. It will move pretty fast, because it will be by Friday morning, it will be really, it'll be offshore. Of North Carolina, actually a little bit northeast of North Carolina, but, you know, they've been just pounded with rain, and Tom told us last hour, they could expect 3 inches, 5 inches. Who really knows? You don't know. I mean, it's so unpredictable. You know, I think about yesterday where they said, okay, we're going to get a little bit of rain, and it just poured here. So
We had, in fact, we had some flooding just based on rain.
Right.
So, in our area.
So you think of when it's a hurricane, and then you know, downgrades to a tropical storm, but who really knows in what areas how much rain you're going to get. But an extremely, extremely dangerous storm. Now the update here at 1 a.m. Central, 2 a.m. Eastern Time, Hurricane Michael, now a Category 4.
Yeah.
Extremely dangerous hurricane now, headed really the bullseye right now, and I don't believe that has changed at all. We'll find out a little bit here when we talk to meteorologist John Trout, but right, you know, heading towards Panama City.
Yeah, when you look back on the history of major hurricanes, there will be names that rise to the top. There is no doubt, based on what we know about Michael already, that in the years to come they will look back on Michael as one of those, again, historic storms, based on the size of it and the amount of damage that it's caused. So we'll be following this, and we'll talk to meteorologist John Trout later this hour, and get his take on this and the latest information that he has.
And, of course, we multitask here on the show on a consistent basis. And one of the things now, just little less than 4 weeks before Election Day is after the Kavanaugh hearings. You know, what are the polls doing? And you and I are really looking forward to what we're going to see over the next couple of days. By the time we get to, you know, this Friday and we start seeing polls from the actual confirmation vote and Collins' speech, and how does that affect certain races out there? We do have a few new polls out there. And again, we don't believe that there are any absolutes when it comes to polling, but it does can give you an idea or at least a snapshot as to what's going on. Looking at the Nevada Senate race,
right.
Jackie Rosen, the Democrat, against Dean Heller, the Republican, where in all the previous polls that were done in September, Rosen was up. One poll done in early September, she was up by one. The Gravis poll, mid-September, she was up by two. By the time the CNN poll came, and these are all likely voter polls, from 9:25 to 9:29, she was up four.
Mm.
Well, the latest NBC News Marist poll done 9:30 to 10:03. So you're really through all the hearings at that point. Again, 574 likely voters. Heller is now up by two. Now, all of these really are in the margin of error, even when she was in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in the margin of error. But if you wish to look at it from one poll to another, and again, their sampling can be different, but what you see is a 6-point swing in that particular race, still in the margin of error. But still, what we're looking for is any type of momentum or any type of, change in the polls, movement in the polls, which could be perceived to be based on the excitement level of people wanting to go out and vote.
Right.
Where a likely voter in these polls would say, you know, a likely voter who said, yeah, I'm a likely voter and I'm 50% sure that I'm going to go out and vote this time, where it's I'm going out and I'm voting.
Sure.
And somehow that ends up changing the polls or moving it in another direction. So that one in Nevada, you know, you and I were looking at other polls, out there.
What's interesting is I was looking at the Florida Senate race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott. And if you look at that right now, you have you've got a couple of the polls. The RCP average showing Nelson up 2.4. But it really has been if you look at it, just a really a tie, because it's well within the margin of error on a number of polls, with the exception of one, a Quinnipiac poll that had Nelson plus seven. But you look at other polls here, a Mason-Dixon poll from 9:24 to 9:27, and Nelson up by one. A WCTV poll that was taken 9:17 to 9:30, which would have included a few days after the Senate hearing. That has Nelson up by one.
All within the margin, but way in the margin of error, because the margin error in both those polls is 3.5.
Yes.
Either way.
And so it really is a dead heat there in Florida. And I think it'll be interesting to watch where that goes. I just think that the polls between over the next few weeks, everything from Kavanaugh, the Kavanaugh hearing, and the vote is going to settle in. And we don't know which side it motivates more. Does it motivate the Democrats to get out more to try and hold the line on the Senate race and in order to make an attempt to block Trump, down the road, for a possible third, nominee, for SCOTUS.
And so we have the latest in the Indiana Senate, Braun versus Donnelly. Donnelly not a vote for Kavanaugh, and Donnelly was up by three at the end of August. The Fox News poll, 9:29 to 10:02, has Donnelly up by two, well within the margin of error of 3.5%. Now they have, there are three different candidates in this race, including the Libertarian.
Yeah.
So, but right now it's 43-41. You know, Donnelly with the lead, but again, excuse me, yes, Donnelly with the lead, the Democrat in there. But then again, that really, you look at that, that is another dead heat that exists out there. And then we go to Missouri, and the latest Fox News poll, 9/29 to 10/2, and that is a dead tie. Now, that is before the actual vote took place and before Collins' speech and everything else. So that's the kind of thing that we're looking for. The polls coming out, maybe here in the next couple of days or early next week, and as we get closer to see the effect that that has had there. There are a ton of these races that are a statistical tie, with even in the statistical tie, Democrats maybe up a point or two. And so this is something that I'm sure is being very carefully watched. And again, when you go into, and we're not pollsters, you know, we're not pollsters. We can read them, but I mean, the methodology of each and every poll has different nuances in it. It all depends on, you know, what the sample is. Do they interview more Democrats than actually are in a, you know, that normally vote in a particular race or not? Or did they oversample Republicans?
Right.
And so you look at it. But overall, when you look at the generalized polls, there are a ton of these Senate races that are extremely close. And so a lot of eyes are watching to see, okay, what's the excitement level going to be, the voter excitement level out of the Kavanaugh hearings, which I do believe will have an impact.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there's where we are right now, looking at some of the Senate races out there.
You look at the race with Rick Scott. It's interesting dynamic. And frankly, Hurricane Michael and how it's handled will be part of that discussion and campaigning on both sides, you know, for the next few weeks. It may seem like an unfortunate situation to many, but that's how politics runs in the United States. And it can make or break a candidate depending on how it's handled. And while, you know, a senator, isn't going to have, control if he were to become a senator, over what's going on in that state necessarily, like a governor would during an emergency situation, how he handles it will be closely watched over the next few days, because it's going to be a very politically sensitive situation. I'm sure many from his camp will tell you, well, we're not focused on that right now, nor should they be. But people outside that camp are focused on that and will be watching.
Well, the reality is that if Florence wasn't handled properly by the Trump administration, mm-hmm. Democrats would be using it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is something that is used in political races.
Yes.
And as you and I have talked about from the very beginning, and I watched a lot more of the of Florence coming in than I have so far of this particular race. But when you watch on the Weather Channel, you came across with a great opinion of the federal government and how they were handling it.
Yes.
It'll be
yes.
interesting to see if the same thing happens, you know, here, because it will be used.
Yes, no doubt.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on customer service. Does your motor carrier provide uniforms for you to wear on the job? Does your company require drivers to adhere to a dress code? If the answer to both questions is no, then it might be a good idea to institute a self-imposed dress code. Appearance can say plenty about a person. The driver who shows up at a delivery dressed in a professional manner gives the customer a better impression of the company and the individuals they're working with. If you're in the middle of a long run, be sure to pack enough clean clothes for the journey. Driving can be grueling and demanding. As the old saying goes, clothes make the man, and fresh clothing can help you feel more comfortable while on the road and when taking breaks for a meal. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. So what do you think was the biggest non-story of the day that got the most, rhetorical coverage? The what is the definition of a mob that was on CNN?
It's a very tough situation.
Or Michael Avenatti challenging Trump to a fight. What was the biggest?
You know you've lost when you go, I'll fight you. You know, Avenatti, you're losing most of your fights, pretty much all of your fights with the president. I wouldn't pick any more.
I just was laughing, you know, the whole thing at CNN. Well, those people that were that were in the restaurant, they're not a mob. They're not a mob. They're just interested, but now they're a mob.
Yeah, it's a mob.
It's a mob.
Yeah. Unruly group. Now, had the president said, if Trump comes out and says it wasn't a mob, they'll come out tomorrow going, we changed our mind. It was a mob.
Listen to Red Eye Radio on your Amazon Echo every day, anytime. Say, Alexa, enable the Red Eye Radio skill. Then, anytime you want to listen, say, Alexa, open Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up here in about 15, 20 minutes, we'll hear from meteorologist John Trout, the latest on Hurricane Michael, which is now a Hurricane 4.
Yeah.
I talked about on CNN yesterday, and it was just a useless conversation about defining the word mob and all that. But it does get to the whole thing of not being civil. You know, Rand Paul calling out Cory Booker for saying get up in the face of Congress people, and Rand Paul and his wife, remember last week, writing a letter an op-ed piece and stating, you know, that she sleeps now with a gun. That, remember, Rand Paul was attacked.
Yep.
Actually, in his yard by a neighbor, and it's coming out and saying, look, you know what you're doing. You're ratcheting up the rhetoric now of complete and total incivility. And the beautiful part is, are we a month past the funeral of John McCain?
Right. Yeah.
Remember when they were talking about civility, and you and I said this isn't going to last? Hillary decided to get involved in it. You ready for this?
All right, what do you got?
Hillary, by the way, let us now announce, Hillary is back.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again.
Let me ask you this, because we know that the left right now, we know that whether it's Ted Cruz being in a restaurant, whether it's Mitch McConnell being at an airport, the mob mentality that exists now, let's get a mob and intimidate people. Do they believe that's going to be effective?
Yes, they believe it's working.
That's my, I guess that would be my point to begin with, that they believe, and now Hillary, of course, when it's well established that the incivility and mob mentality now exists, then she jumps on board.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm going to join now.
How many months later?
Right.
Yeah.
And
she's no Maxine Waters.
But this again is where we talk about that they believe that they believe it's going to be effective. Either they believe there's one of two things. Either they believe it's going to be effective, or they're just so so enraged they have nothing left of substance to offer the people.
Yeah.
So they just, that's the natural, I guess, outlet is rage and get in people's face wherever they are, in their own private time, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what, they believe that's going to intimidate Republicans or conservatives?
Yeah.
You really believe that?
Yeah.
You really believe, if you're on the left, you honestly believe, oh, if we do this, then they'll be scared and they'll back off.
Right.
Do you really believe that?
Do they believe that it's going to change the supporters of a Ted Cruz? No. Wait. It is. It's going to further motivate them. It's going to take people who might have decided or maybe just have been sitting on the fence, maybe haven't been enthusiastic about getting out and voting. I mean, conservatives or Republicans, it is going to absolutely motivate them. I was actually online and I was seeing a number of people that were talking about early voting. You know, here's where to find out where early, when the early voting starts in your area. That means they're chomping at the bit. Now, we don't make predictions, but we know right now both sides are motivated. The question is, which side is motivated more? And historically, where is that greater turnout?
Did you see the NBC reporter who went to the college in California?
Mm.
And there was like 30 people waiting for a bus at a college, all young people.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them sitting right there. And he said, is anybody voting?
Yeah,
in the midterm, not one person raised their hand.
Right.
Finally, they found one person,
mm-hmm.
or they found two people. They said, yeah, we're going to vote. Well, what's your concern? Well, you know, college and cost of college. And well, what about the congressional things and the Russia investigation? We don't even know what's going on. We don't pay attention to that stuff at all. I mean, it was really, really interesting. But I guess the point, think about this now, because Hillary now coming aboard. As we said, with everything that went on, the insanity from the mainstream of the Democrat Party, now that the mainstream of the Democrat Party thinks it's okay to say due process doesn't matter, well, then Hillary can jump aboard and say, civility, no, it's gone till we take over. We need not to be civil.
We'll give you civility when we get our way.
Right. We're not going to be civil. And think about what it's about now. You're not civil because you believe in what? Due process.
Mm-hmm.
A presumption of innocence,
mm-hmm.
that you look at any case, a political case, a civil case, or a criminal case, and you judge it by what? The evidence that exists. Because you believe that, because mm-hmm. that's where it's all coalescing now. It's getting right to that point. Now that you believe that, you may never be treated civil again. We will find you wherever you are. You've heard that call already. We'll mm-hmm. find you wherever you are. We'll stalk you wherever you are, mm-hmm. at your restaurant, at your home. Nothing is off limits. Why? Because you believe in due process. And you believe that's going to change people that believe in due process under the law, that people that believe in the Constitution and people that believe in fairness are going to be intimidated because you attempt to get in their face?
Yeah.
You actually believe that?
Yeah.
You're a bunch of idiots if mm-hmm. you believe that's going to change the opposition.
Yes.
It's going to do the exact opposite. You're stupid people for thinking that.
Yes, you are. And, by the way, please keep it up. And thank you, Hillary, who, by the way, her version of due process is to give money to her lawyers, Perkins Coie, so they can hire Fusion GPS, so they can hire Christopher Steele to go get salacious and unverified information on her opposition, her opponent in 2016, and then have her friends in the Justice Department use it to get a warrant on somebody in her opponent's campaign. That's due process for Hillary Clinton. By the way, how did that work out for her?
It didn't.
There was always a 20% chance she was going to win.
But to me, that's the thing that's come out of all of this,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is the defense now of incivility for those to attack and go after those people, whoever, where they are in their personal lives, because they believe in due process under the law. And that thought's been in my head since last week, thinking, they think this is going to be effective?
Yeah.
Whose mind do they think they're going to change? They're not going to change the people watching the TV who see somebody eating dinner and you get in their face.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to go, well, no, leave them alone. Let them eat their, you know, the average independent who you're trying to convince. Going to go, mm-hmm. no, that's ridiculous. Hillary calling for incivility. Well, we're only going to be civil if we get our way.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
John McCain, you hear this?
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah, we're only civil when we, and that was the whole point with John McCain when they were talking about that, we need more people like John McCain. You're not saying that about Joe Manchin, are you?
No.
Oh, what you mean is you need more Republicans to act as Democrats on policy. Oh.
We told you the whole civility thing. And it goes back because that's where it really mm-hmm. got to its peak was at John McCain's funeral where the left was talking about civility and that's what we need and bipartisanship. Is that what you've seen the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, right.
Now you have their last presidential candidate calling for incivility. On the
right.
only way that you can have civility is if you win.
Right.
We told you they were lying to you. Mm-hmm. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hurricane Michael, now upgraded to a Category 4 hurricane, heading for the coast of Florida. Let's stop and talk with meteorologist John Trout about the latest. Good morning, John.
Good morning. It's amazing. When we talked yesterday, just 24 hours ago, we had a Cat 1 storm and moving into a Cat 2 territory. We're now up to a 4 with maximum sustained winds at 130 miles an hour, gusts even greater. How do we know? Well, those reconnaissance aircraft, the NOAA Hurricane Hunter aircraft, go into the eye of the storm and they measure that data.
So what are we looking at in terms of a timeline? What can the people in the path of Hurricane Michael expect from those first high winds coming in all the way to the eye reaching the shore? What should we expect and when?
This really is the calm before the storm. I just did a check on the wind speed at Tallahassee, Florida, and we're only looking at about 17 miles an hour. But from here on out, throughout the day today, we will see those wind speeds increase. We could see landfall as a Category 4. We're kind of splitting hairs, though. I mean, we will see winds in excess of 100 miles an hour. We're talking almost a sustained tornado here. Folks from the Midwest can appreciate tornadoes, and we're talking about not only a tornadic event, but a rain event as well, and possibly tornadoes spawned from this system over the next, say, 36 hours or so.
What is the threat of storm surge, and where will those areas, the highest threat, be?
We're looking at, for the highest threats, Mexico Beach, Florida, to Keaton Beach, 9 to 13 feet.
Wow.
Now, that's just that wall of water that this wind pushes in. Couple that with high tide, and we know tides in those areas can range from between 3 and 6 feet, depending upon where you are on the coast. This water will also push inland, Eric and Gary, up through rivers and streams and the swampy areas. So we'll see smaller towns inundated. We could even see some major highways like I-10 affected, not only from the flooding, but the wind event is going to cause, no doubt, some power lines down, power outages. We've got debris on roadways from roofs ripped off of homes. We're talking about a very potentially catastrophic event here.
What time do you see it coming on shore? Right now?
Right now, we're still looking at the early morning hours today, around 8, 9 a.m., and that's the actual landfall of the, say, eye. But until then, anyone listening to me in that region, you've got to take precautions. You've got to save your life and family and heed the warnings from what the officials have been mentioning for the past 24 hours. Get out of the way. This thing is a potential killer.
Meteorologist John Trout, and I guess we're expecting another update here in just a little over 2 hours from the National Hurricane Center?
Yeah, we'll get another one, and by then we'll know whether it should arrive as a Cat 3 or Cat 4, but I don't want people to split hairs on that. When we categorize tornadoes, we're only talking about the wind speed. We saw from Hurricane Florence a couple weeks ago, and we saw last year from Hurricane Harvey, that the category does not matter as much when we're talking about flooding, because Only the wind speeds are part of the categories. One of the things I dislike about this Saffir-Simpson scale. The real killer here is never the wind. It's always the flooding. Mm. People think they can get through the roadways. They can ride it out. But those floodwaters are very destructive, very dangerous, and very unpredictable.
Certainly. Meteorologist John Trout will be following the story, of course, and the storm throughout the day. And then as its path continues inland. And by the way, what should we expect? Are we still on target to see a few inches of rain for those areas in the Carolinas affected by Florence?
A little less than we talked about yesterday. I'd mentioned possibly a foot of rain. That's been scaled back by a couple inches. But yes, those areas locally could see some foot rainfall total amounts into Georgia, into the Carolinas and North Carolina. And again, don't forget the potential for tornadoes spawned from this system.
All right. John Trout.
Thank you, John,
for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
let you get back to work.
Okay.
So he'll be following this information, of course, throughout the day. But as John mentioned, you need to heed the warnings and any of the directives given by local officials. And just keep in mind that the there are going to be a number of things that keep first responders from getting to you. And so that's the point. And also, at some point, you could lose power. It may not be safe to drink water from the tap. And so there are a number of things that could become extremely problematic. And, of course, the officials and all of us want you to be safe and to be able to survive this. The things can be replaced. The people cannot.
And it was just 55 minutes ago that the new advisory came out from the National Hurricane Service on Hurricane Michael, the 1 a.m. Central time advisory, that it was upped to a strength 4 hurricane, a maximum sustained winds now 130 miles an hour. So it is a strength 4 hurricane, which is extremely dangerous and will be on modern records the biggest hurricane ever to hit if it stays at a 4. I even believe as a 3 it may be the biggest ever to hit, or the strongest to ever hit,
right? Yeah,
the panhandle of Florida.
In terms of the wind, and John brings up a great point about those spinoff tornadoes in those areas, which can also be destructive as well. We'll follow the story. And coming up next hour, in fact, we'll talk with meteorologist Tom Hale, get an update from him.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hurricane Michael, now a strength 4 hurricane. Here's Apalachicola, Florida Mayor Van Johnson.
We have a handful of people who have chose to stay, and I'm really dismayed at that because, again, this is a life-threatening storm. If anything I can get across, it's to leave. My biggest fear is flooding, erosion, structural damage, and for those people that didn't heed the warning, possible loss of life.
So the latest National Hurricane Advisory was just a little over an hour ago, and the sustained winds went from 125 miles an hour to 130 miles per hour, making it now an extremely dangerous, as the National Hurricane Center calls it, an extremely dangerous hurricane. If it hits as a 4, would be the strongest hurricane to ever hit the Florida panhandle in modern times, in recorded records. So this is a very, very bad storm. We're being told a flood surge anywhere, depending on where you are, along that portion of the Big Bend of the coast, anywhere between 8 and even 12 or 14 feet.
Right. Extremely dangerous storm here that is, again, not to be ignored. The idea of staying where you are, again, is ill-advised by the authorities talking about the loss of power and who knows how long that power could be out. The inability of first responders to get to you. And then if at the last moment you were to try and decide, get out of the way of the storm, then of course that would be in some cases possibly, impossible. You could be in a situation where you were trapped in that home or in that building and can't get out because the roads are filled with, water, debris, or all of the above. It is going to be, again, a situation that where you start seeing these stronger winds later this morning, and then the eye anywhere between, most forecasters saying anywhere between 3 and 6 p.m. come ashore there in Florida. And then not only the storm surge, as you mentioned, Gary, the rainfall potential. You could see 8 to 12 inches of area, rain in the area, and you could see, you will see likely flash flooding in some of those areas. And that will cause, again, those problems where, you know, you're going to have people flooding, and the storm surge being the deadliest part of any storm like this. Not just the winds with debris and taking out structures, but the flooding where people just make a decision to try and drive through the flooding or get through it, and that becomes deadly in many cases.
Hey, and look, even, you know, Tallahassee, that's a little bit inland. They're expecting, you know, 80-mile-an-hour winds still at that point and a ton of wind, so a bunch of problems could be had there. As we go through Wednesday, it's interesting because it's still, the movement is still, from what I can see, dead north at 12 miles per hour. Mm. But at some point, it's going to start taking that easterly bent. Mm. And then when it hits the shoreline, really at that point going, you know, actually more east than north.
Mm-hmm.
And it will hit, it slows down a little bit, it seems. Because at 7 p.m. Wednesday, the what would be left of the eye, which would at that point still be hurricane winds, would be right at the border of Florida and southwestern Georgia. At that point, then it cuts right across the middle of Georgia,
right.
And then it continues to move northeast, goes through South Carolina. And the eastern half of the eastern southern half of North Carolina. So they've got a ton of rain there, as we all know, because of Hurricane Florence. But also their coastline could also be affected, as there are also tropical storm warnings, especially along the Georgia and South Carolina line. Actually, tropical storm warnings there and watches. For North Carolina. So that's where we are right now.
Quite often you'll see tornadoes that spin off from storms like this, and they can become destructive, and they are and they happen very quickly. Knowing and growing up in Tornado Alley, you understand that often there is little to no warning for those tornadoes, and they become, of course, a separate destructive force of their own. So certainly all the folks in the path of Hurricane Michael over the next 24 to 48 hours, heed the warnings, keep your radios on, keep batteries charged, and stay alert. Coming up here in less than 30 minutes after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Tom Hale, who did a great job in covering Hurricane Florence for us. We talked to him earlier. He also covered Hurricane Irma in Florida for us on Red Eye Radio. So we'll talk to him about this new report, the update from the National Hurricane Center, which came across at 2 a.m. Eastern, and what changed here, and again, what all of this means in terms of the energy behind Hurricane Michael.
Getting back to what we were talking about last hour when we played the audio cut from Hillary Clinton saying civility is impossible until the Democrats take power again. So that was her call for incivility.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is, and we've talked about, you know, whether it's Ted Cruz or, you know, in the restaurant that made big news a couple of weeks ago, or Mitch McConnell at the airport, or Jeff Flake in the elevator. Mm-hmm. What's going on right now? The call, remember, from Maxine Waters. Remember when Maxine Waters, and she might have really ignited that political flame of actually Democrats to elected office that was calling it. And so we saw what happened this past weekend. We saw what happened to Ted Cruz, saw what happened to Mitch McConnell, saw what happened to Jeff Flake. The conversation on CNN yesterday, it's not a mob. It's just people expressing their viewpoints. And it's like, well, most of America looks at it when they see people screaming and yelling and going into a private place, not an organized protest. Organized protests Americans are fine with. You go out and you protest and you're with tens of thousands of other people and it's a peaceful protest, and that's fine. Americans don't want riots. Americans don't want mob rule. They don't want you go. Most Americans don't approve of the fact of you going into a place that is not your property, trespassing just to the point of harassing, somebody else, has happened in Ted Cruz's place. But that call to harass people anywhere. Yesterday, Rand Paul again, and, you know, Rand Paul's wife has been on this here for the last couple of weeks talking about the instability. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul on Tuesday took aim with the rhetoric employed by Senator Cory Booker and others, accusing them of ratcheting up the conversation to the point where unstable people could commit violence. Said Paul to a Kentucky radio host, "I fear there's going to be an assassination.
Wow.
I really worry that someone is going to be killed, and that those who are in ratcheting up the conversations, those who are saying get in their face, they have to realize that they bear some responsibility if this elevates to violence. These are people that are unstable," Paul says. "We don't want to encourage them. We have to somehow ratchet it down and say we're not encouraging them, that violence is never okay, or there is never a reason to resolve things that way." Directly calling out Booker, who last July told activists to get up in the face of some congresspeople. Paul referenced his own assault at the hands of a neighbor, as well as last year's baseball field shooting, which Representative Steve Scalise was wounded, to show that unstable people can easily take things too far. And then we talk about the fact that Hillary talked about, you know, no civility.
Right.
Her call. So you've mainstreamed it completely now. When Hillary comes out, you can't get more mainstream Democrat over the last 20 years. So Hillary now calling for incivility. Number one, we talked about the fact that, do they actually think this is an effective way to go? Do they actually think that politicians, you know, calling for it now to the point of Hillary Clinton saying can't have civility, which is the call for incivility, which is the call to harass people in their private life. And the first thing that hit me was they think this is going to be effective. But then you get to the point of a Hillary now bringing it up, where she feels comfortable saying it. Look, Hillary's a follower. She'll BS you and not take an opinion on anything if she believes that it is perceived as radical at all to anybody in her base.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it before. Remember when she was up in Canada?
Yeah.
And she was asked about the pipeline?
Right. I'm not going to comment on that because other people right now are making a decision. Look, you're running for president. Right. This is still an issue. We need to know what your thoughts on it are. And she didn't want to take a side.
Right. And so now here's Hillary Clinton calling for incivility.
Mm-hmm.
And think about this. So now it's becoming mainstream in the and what? Why incivility over what? What is the issue? You're calling for due process. You're calling for a presumption of innocence. You're calling for a preponderance of evidence. You're saying, where's the evidence? You're coming out, because this is, and we had talked about this yesterday, what came out of this whole thing, from Democrats, is if you believe in due process, then you are enabling rapists. And therefore, you deserve no civility because of it. Which is, of course, that's their definition. It's not the definition of people that believe in due process under the law. people that believe in due process under the law obviously are not advocating rape or sexual assault or any other crime.
Right.
And that's the point. And so think about it. That it's very important to get to the actual issue. What is the point that they view that is so radical that the right is taking where incivility must lead? And it's that simple point. The belief in due process and evidence in any case to show the guilt of anybody and not just an allegation. That is what has set off even the mainstream now of the Democrat Party to call for incivility. This is how far, how low. We always wonder, we always ask the question, how low will they go? You know, calling somebody a Nazi, you know, and saying that, that's been for a long time. But you get to the point now where they're calling for incivility based on people's opinion on the other side that evidence is how you judge somebody's guilt.
Right.
Due process should apply in all of these cases, which means you look for the evidence to find somebody's guilt. You don't believe anybody because of their demographic, because of their gender, because of their race, because of their age. You believe people because the evidence backs what they say. Now, you can believe them. You can sit there and go, well, I think it sounded credible. That doesn't mean that person, that you look at them and call them a rapist, because that's what they were doing. They were calling him a rapist and a gang rapist.
Yes.
I believe her, which means they believe you did it.
Yes.
They believe Kavanaugh did it. The evidence isn't there.
Right.
Never been there.
Right.
Yet that's what they're stating. And because you don't agree with them, because you say, no, I believe in the preponderance of evidence. I believe in the presumption of innocence. I don't believe anybody just because they say it. I need evidence. And when somebody's stories change, I'm suspicious. Those are all rational, critical thinking, common sense arguments. And the Democrats, if you believe that way, are now calling for incivility to harass you everywhere, even invade your privacy wherever you are.
And it's not just the old guard in Maxine Waters or Hillary Clinton. It's Cory Booker. People that are called the future of the party.
It's
the mainstream.
It's now Hillary.
Yes. Well, and you know, you can easily dismiss a Maxine Waters and a Hillary as the old guard, but the future of the party is this. So if Hillary's jumping on, well, and by the way, Hillary's jumping on board, as you mentioned, because everybody else is, because she sees this as the future of the party.
And she also believes it's the mainstream of the party.
She's comfortable in saying it.
It's okay to call for incivility because somebody believes in due process, a presumption of innocence, a preponderance of the evidence to decide somebody, whether you believe somebody is guilty or not.
You went from weeks ago people talking about John McCain and we need more civility to the official call for incivility in just a matter of weeks.
Right. You believe in due process under the Constitution. You believe in the presumption of innocence. You don't believe somebody just because they say it, that the evidence has to prove it, and their story should remain consistent. You believe those kind of things which are embedded in the Constitution of the United States. Then you are a rape enablist.
Yes.
A rapist enablist. That's what you are.
Right.
And because you are, no civility towards you. That is their opinion.
Right.
Now, I have to ask you, is that insane or what?
Well, and before you try and dismiss Rand Paul and his concerns, you have to remember on the day that Steve Scalise got shot, that was an attempted multiple assassination. Mm-hmm. That's what that was.
You're absolutely right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Tom Hale will join us on the latest on Hurricane Michael, which has been upgraded overnight. And in fact, in the last National Hurricane Center advisory about an hour and a half ago, to a Hurricane 4.
Yeah, strength. And we'll get another one a little over 90 minutes from now and see where that goes. But certainly, again, not much is changing in terms of the fact that this is a life-threatening storm, a major hurricane on its way to Florida. So we'll talk to Tom here in just a few minutes and follow the story, of course, throughout the morning, this morning, and as well the rest of the week as Michael continues its path through the southeast and then back out over the Atlantic.
Did you see where Senator Tom Cotton said that he believes Schumer's people leaked the Ford letter?
Really?
Yeah. He was on Hugh Hewitt's show yesterday, yeah, and said, I believe the Schumer political operation was behind this from the very beginning.
Mm. Well, I mean, it wouldn't be totally unexpected, right? It doesn't seem out of the realm of possibilities, because if you're Feinstein, you don't take it to Chairman Grassley, you take it to
Schumer,
your party leader,
right,
and have him deal with it, right? Mm-hmm. For VDO Roadlog, here's your forecast.
Data from Air Force Reserve and NOAA Hurricane Hunter aircraft indicate that the maximum sustained winds have increased to near 130 miles an hour, with higher gusts possible as Michael becomes a Category 4 hurricane. Michael, extremely dangerous, life-threatening storm surge, hurricane-force winds, and the heavy rainfall expected, as well as the potential for tornadoes to spawn from the result of this system. We'll get 9 to 13 feet of water inundation along the coastline and as much as 12 inches of rainfall from the system for areas just inland from where we expect Michael to make landfall in the Big Bend and Panhandle area of Florida. We'll see rain from the system into the Carolinas over the next several days. Also be aware of winter weather advisories from the northern plains into Colorado on the eastern side of the Rockies. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. If you'd like to get in, lines are open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
For those not on Ambien, there's Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We have lots of insomniacs out there. And thank you for listening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look, I have insomnia, and I have vowed I will not sleep until I find the cause of it.
Well, it is. Yeah. We'll talk about sleep coming up here in a little bit, but yeah, more important things out there than our sleep.
Much
right
more
now.
Important. Meteorologist Tom Hale is here to get us caught up on Hurricane Michael. And good morning again, Tom. As you predicted, Hurricane Michael now a Category 4.
Yes, yes, it is Category 4. I agree with you on the sleep part, by the way. 100%.
Yeah, we're keeping Tom awake, in fact, right now, but for a very good reason. Yeah.
This is what these storms do.
Yeah.
And, every once in a while you get to be able to capitalize on that adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a meteorologist, one of the few things that we get to do and as broadcasters in our lifetime is to maybe save a life.
Yeah.
And here we have an opportunity because we're being heard from one end of the coast to the other side of the United States. Yeah. And every one of these people who are listening right now have family and friends or know someone who has family and friends that are along this coast.
Mm.
And so I'm making the suggestion that you get in touch with your family and friends and make sure that they're doing the right thing. A simple example, in Panama City Beach, there are 6, possibly now 7 shelters that are open. So if you've decided to stay along the beachfront, and not move inland. Maybe you don't have to. You can move inland to a little town called Fountain up 231, or you can take it a little bit further and head on up to Interstate 20 if you want to go. That's only an hour drive up the road to Interstate 10. Mm. The simple thing is that you need to get out of harm's way.
Yeah.
When we talk about a Category 4 storm, I want to put this in perspective, and not a slow-moving storm like we saw with Florence. It was a Category 4 storm that hit Puerto Rico last year called Irma. And we've all seen the pictures and the devastation. Now, devastation is relative to what it hits. So if it's a rotted tree, it could take a breeze to take that thing out.
Right.
If the homes are not built to handle hurricanes, or they haven't had hurricanes in a long time, and the building standards have become lax, guess what? Mm. Same story. You get greater amounts of devastation. Here, this is something that they have not seen along this coastline historically, period. Along the Panama City Beach to Tallahassee, Pensacola Beach, simply put, the panhandle, and then the Big Bend area. That's the area that swoops around and swings down to Cedar Key. There hasn't been a Category 4 storm hit. And so that's in itself something that nobody can relate to. And when you can't relate to something, you relate to what you can. And what you can, if somebody's been around since 1985, that would be Kate.
Mm.
And Kate was quite a devastating storm. And at that point, you have to say to yourself, well, if you haven't been around for Kate, you know, what other things have come by? Well, there's been very few October storms to begin with. This storm is an October storm. Matthew was an October storm. And there was a Ophelia, but Ophelia was a major. All these were major storms, but Ophelia was offshore, and so it didn't have that kind of an effect on Florida. And so right now, if you're listening or if you have family and friends along that area, you need to understand that on Wednesday evening, 100-mile-an-hour gusts are going to be common. And that's after it's come onshore. Tomorrow evening, because we're expecting still a landfall sometime around 3 to 4 o'clock, and that means that it'll speed up a little bit before it comes to shore.
Yeah.
Right, and now it's going to the north at 12. So.
And of course, you know, it's been pointed out time and time again, not just the winds and the destruction of property and presenting a danger to humans, but really the flooding and the storm surge here, the water that comes along with a storm like this, being potentially life-threatening. In fact, it is life-threatening and is often deadly. And that is something to be aware of. It is not just the strength of the storm in terms of winds, but also the water that it's going to deliver both in storm surge and rainfall.
Well, yeah. You know, remember in past, it used to be lightning. You know, lightning was like the number one weather killer.
Yeah.
And you know why lightning isn't the number one weather killer?
Mm.
Because we convinced everybody not to go out in the lightning anymore.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Get indoors, it's lightning.
Right.
But, you know, we've done a really lousy job at convincing people to use common sense when they're on the road and they're driving.
Yeah.
And we had over 30 people in the Carolinas drown because they decided they were going to be tougher and they knew what they were doing better than the people who were telling them just stay off the road right now.
Right.
And so, yeah, a storm surge is usually felt along the coast and let's say maybe 5 to 10 miles inland, wherever there's a waterway that water from the Gulf of Mexico can move its way in. And so whether you're in Apalachicola or you are in Panama City or you're swinging around toward the coastline just south of Perry in the Big Bend, you're looking at a storm surge that's going to be easily 9 feet.
Mm.
Could be less.
Right.
It could be up to 9 feet or even 13. Actually, the Weather Service has got it plotted at 9 to 13 feet in that area.
Tom, for those of us who have never witnessed that firsthand, describe the dynamics of a storm surge, especially one with the potential of 9 to 12 feet or more, as you mentioned. Because, you know, we've seen the recent video from the tsunami in Indonesia, and we know, so we can see that kind of force. In terms of a storm surge, I mean, what are the dynamics of that? What describe that to us. What takes place during a storm surge?
Yeah, because I'm looking here like at Panama City Beach, for example, that's, you know, right there. I mean, there's no barrier. It's not one of the bays. It's right there. What is the effect? How far? I mean, that goes in a pretty long way, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you go into the West Bay or the East Bay, mm-hmm. All the way up through what they call Deer Point Lake, which is really an extension, the northern extension of the North Bay or the Grand Lagoon, this entire area from the lower Grand Lagoon, which is basically where the beach is,
mm-hmm.
the bridge that goes over to the beach,
right.
And inland, all of that water rises uniformly, pretty much.
Mm.
It's kind of like turning the water on. It's not like what you see in a tsunami. It's
right.
Like tsunami. It's turning the water on and watching your bathtub fill.
Right.
And except in this particular case, as the storm gets closer in the last hour and a half to 2 hours or so, the bathtubs fill. And so in the Carolinas, I don't know if it was the record, but it's darn close to it. Newburgh, North Carolina, picked up a storm surge that was at least 10 feet.
Mm.
There may have been a higher storm surge further around the point. That sticks out there off the Carolinas, but this water just keeps rising, and as it starts to rise 3 feet, 6 feet, and so forth, you need to be able to get to a place that's higher than the storm surge.
Mm.
That's as really simple as it gets, and this water is moving, and so the water has motion. It can erode stuff. And when I say it's moving, it's normal current, and it's moving because it's also got winds blowing it at a good speed.
Mm.
And so you've got a certain amount of, it's not going to be moving as fast as the wind because the surface tension of the water is going to slow that body down, but it's still moving. So the place that I recall, and I drove through this area a couple times, because it's just a beautiful ride. If you've done this, if you've driven from East Point to Apalachicola, a cute little town, especially when you're coming across the bridge and you're looking at Apalachicola Bay down to the south and East Bay on the other side, then you notice as you're looking off along the water, all these nice homes, but they're on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all stilted easily at about 10 feet. 13 feet would still inundate those homes.
Wow. Yeah. That's, you know, that puts it in perspective for anyone who's gone to a beach and seen these houses. In fact, we stayed in one, in Texas in the Galveston area over mm-hmm. the summer, and we've done that, many times. But if you've ever been to these areas and you've seen these houses on these stilts, you're right. Typically they're about 10 feet high. But add another 3 feet to that potentially, and that means even on stilts, you're going to see destruction and flooding of those homes, and that is very, very powerful and sobering, frankly.
Well, you've heard the terms high-profile vehicles.
Right.
Okay, well, this is a house that's a high-profile house, mm-hmm. and once you get past the stilts, now you've got 3 feet of water going into a more solid structure.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a lot easier to topple and destroy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
wow.
Great point. Yeah.
Yeah, great point. The higher center of gravity.
Yes.
In that situation, which becomes very destructive very easily. And so, again, the timeline here, we're looking for the eye to come ashore sometime in the afternoon?
Yes, and right now, it depends. If it goes the speed that it's going right now and makes a nice even turn and doesn't increase speed when it makes the turn a little bit to the north northeast, it wouldn't get there till 6:30 Eastern time.
Mm.
But if it picks up some speed, even a couple miles an hour, goes from 12 to 14 and so forth, we could anticipate this thing coming in a little bit earlier than that, around 4 o'clock. And that's kind of what everybody's betting on right now.
Right.
They're getting rain right now. Mm. Pensacola has just had light rain. And in fact, all of this is very light rain. Mm. Tropical rain starts off as little fine drops and then increases from there.
Yeah.
There's a couple little thunderstorms that are running anywhere from Apalachicola up to Pensacola Beach. So this is the eye-opener. Hey, notice it's raining. It's real. It's coming your way.
Right. How far inland can we expect those hurricane-force winds, anything from 75 miles an hour and above, to sustain? How far inland and how long do you expect that to be the case?
All right, let's assume that it comes ashore, and we'll just simply call it where it is right now, a 4.
Okay, right.
All right, 45 miles inland is what you would be looking at.
Okay.
And 45 miles inland would make those winds go to Panama City at least, possibly a little further out. And it would take those winds back over to probably not to Perry, but at least to St. Mark's National Wildlife Refuge area, which is to the just south or just slightly southeast of Tallahassee.
Okay.
But now remember this. Right now, the location is 180 miles to the south-southwest of Panama City, or 170 miles, okay, southwest of Apalachicola. Tropical storm force winds, 39 miles an hour and more, are extending out right now as we speak, 175 miles.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks. So they're starting to feel the beginning of those 39-mile-an-hour winds at the extremities, Apalachicola, and possibly, you know, in an hour or two, by morning for sure, when the sun comes up, they'll be feeling the 39-mile, 40-mile-an-hour winds.
All right.
Even then, it may still be possible for you to get inland.
Meteorologist Tom Hale. Tom, we'll talk to you at the bottom of the next hour and the following hour as well to get caught up. Thank you, Tom, for your time, and we'll talk to you in just a bit. And we'll stay on top of Hurricane Michael right here on Red Eye Radio.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, latest on Hurricane Michael. We should be getting a new update from the National Hurricane Center in about an hour. Last update at 1 a.m. Central Time, 2 a.m. Eastern Time, was that it had increased its strength to a Hurricane 4 strength. So that's winds of over 130 miles an hour, putting in the category of a very, very, very dangerous hurricane. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. We'll tell you about Senator Tom Booker says Schumer's operation released Dr. Ford's letter. Latest election polls and analysis says we're just under a month away, Eric. Just a month away. And is there any movement because of the Kavanaugh hearings and the Kavanaugh vote and the Kavanaugh confirmation? That more coming up, plus mortgage rates going up as interest rates go up. One thing that hasn't been talked about is interest rates now are getting to the point of doubling, tripling, quadrupling what we pay on interest for the national debt that could cut into future budgets here or make us borrow a heck of a lot more.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.